When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at the Operating Engineers, Local 139. Also, our friends at Madison Computer Works. Joining us now, our Congressman, Mark Pocan. Well, if you live in the Madison area, South Central Wisconsin. All right, Congressman, good to have you on the show.
Oh, thanks so much, Lai. Glad to be here.
Is there much going on? We probably aren't going to be able to fill much time today, but...
No, it's quiet. I think we've renamed a post office or two. It's been interesting times for all of us, hasn't it?
Well, let me play a little clip. Your favorite Secretary of State, who you were last week, wanted to hold back his salary because he was not cooperating.
Well, I still want to.
You still want to hold it back. Well, he went to Nashville, and I think he thought he'd get a cupcake interview with the reporter from the NBC affiliate WSMV. Here's what happened.
The U.S. is getting out of Syria.
Well, I got the wrong clip there. Let me just dial this back here. All right, here it is.
Big announcement, yeah.
But he's totally owned.
Well, I might get this right yet, Congressman. Totally, I apologize.
But he's totally
owned. All right, hang on.
The radical Democrat.
Well.
I get the taste for your clip.
Well, you're gonna hear some of the stuff we're talking about today.
I think that it's time for us to put a vote on the floor, a resolution for the inquiry. They want.
All right. I don't know why I can't find this.
One of your most trusted senior advisors resigned. He's adding his voice to a number of career diplomats who've expressed frustration over what they see as your failure to stand up for government servants and servants like Ambassador Yovanovitch have been caught up in the Ukraine controversy. Did you do enough to defend the ambassador privately and publicly against the smear campaign that was being waged against her? And will you speak to that now?
Well, ma'am, you have some of your facts wrong. So you should be careful about things you assert as facts before you state them.
Can you speak to Michael McKinley's resignation?
I don't talk about personnel matters.
Did he speak to you personally about it as he resigned?
I don't talk about personnel matters.
Did you support the ambassador being recalled months before her tenure was up?
I've supported every mission that the State Department's been engaged in.
In mid-February, you were in Warsaw, and so was Rudy Giuliani. During your time there, did you meet with Giuliani?
You know, I don't talk about who I meet with. I went to Warsaw for a particular purpose.
So you're not going to say whether you met with him?
So when I was in Warsaw, I had a singular focus. My focus was singularly on the work that we have done.
It sounds like you're not going to say.
When I was in Warsaw, we were working diligently to accomplish the mission.
Text messages show that diplomats under your authority told the Ukrainians that a good relationship with President Trump was only possible if they investigated his political opponent and theories about what happened in 2016. Were you aware that this was happening?
You know, again, you've got your facts wrong. Sounds like you're working, at least in part, for the Democratic National Committee when you phrase a predicate of a question in that way. It's unfortunate.
She did her job.
Yeah, she certainly did, and he did his job, not giving an answer, I guess. But, you know, clearly she brought up many of the points that are happening right now in the committees that are doing the impeachment inquiry, because we have lots of questions on all the actions that the president and his administration have done in regards to Ukraine, and much more than that.
John Gotti seemed more cooperative in an interview than he did there. But how does it make, as a former colleague of yours, how does it make you feel to see him acting like that's the Secretary of State?
Well, you know, there's going to be a very, very thin chapter for 2019 on Profiles of Courage, because we just seen too many people in this administration not stand up for the country over their political party. And, you know, whether it be Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, whether it be Secretary Pompeo, Attorney General Barr, Rudy Giuliani, the president, go down the list, legislative leadership, you know, the newest Cheney in federal government, you know, no one will stand up for the rule of law. Instead, they're standing up for their political party. And I think, you know, people really get it. That's why the popular support for the impeachment has moved so very quickly.
So your colleague from Sacramento, John Garamendi, essentially said that it's just time to take a vote. What are your thoughts on that, on the inquiry?
You know, there's no rule that you need to, and to me, I don't really care if Nancy Pelosi decides that we're going to spend a day or two on the floor doing that instead of lowering prescription drug prices, which I know is one of the biggest focuses when we come back this week. Fine. I don't think it's necessary. More importantly, I want to make sure the community
Does it give it validity?
Well, I think people already know we're doing this. I mean, the only people trying to put this out there as a talking point is Donald Trump and his administration. And I can guarantee you, he said, you know, once we do that, he'll cooperate. He's never going to cooperate. So anyone who believes that is willing to kick at a football that's going to be removed one more time. I personally am tired of landing on my butt.
Well, I don't think, did you ever buy what he said?
No, but I mean, I've watched us collectively maybe land on our butts. How's that sound?
Well, all right.
And you know, it would be, it's something you could do. And if Nancy Pelosi decides, again, we're going to spend a couple floor days on that because that's what it'll take, fine, so be it. I'm really excited about the prescription drug bill that's going to be coming up this month. It's a major move forward. There's a lot of other stuff I think we need to get done, especially as you know, our calendar, whatever we can get done is going to happen this year. Next year, it's a lot harder when you get into the presidential election year. So unless there's great consensus, it's hard to see things move. So this is our period to do things, and I just don't want to slow down the already ambitious agenda we've put forward.
It's really hard to cut through the noise of what's going on right now. The Republicans are running ads against some of the candidates who live in the Democrats who live in swing districts saying, you know, they're ignoring the job they're supposed to do by doing impeachment.
Yeah, what I love is I've just had town halls in every county in the district, and I love to share. Very first thing I share is we've passed something like 240, 250 bills in the House of Representatives. 38 of them have been taken up by the Senate. The Senate has only passed 60 bills. They've been, you know, approving some judges, but they haven't done anything. We've done the appropriation process before the August break. They had done absolutely nothing, which means we had to extend our fiscal year. We've sent all this stuff to the Senate, from prescription drug prices on generics to getting back into the Paris Climate Agreement, to raising the minimum wage, to protecting people with pre-existing conditions, to gun violence prevention, to campaign finance and ethics and elections reform, and on and on and on. And all these bills go to the Senate, and apparently they get put in the back of a pickup truck and driven to Kentucky and then buried in someone's backyard. That's been the process that we've seen. But for them to say, and I love the president's hashtag, do nothing Democrats, I'm very willing to have that debate, because we have passed a whole bunch of things with really strong popular support, and it's only Mitch McConnell and the Republicans that can't seem to get anything done.
Are they burying them in Kentucky or St. Petersburg? And I don't mean Florida.
Well, you know, it is funny that, you know, for a guy who's as experienced as he is a politician, when he got the nickname Moscow Mitch because he won't even pass simple protections for our elections for 2020, it really hurt his feelings. And he told us several times
that it rattled him. All right. Well, in the meantime, the president has been having his little parties where he goes out and gets a bunch of people whipped up.
Yeah.
The radical Democrats' policies are crazy, their politicians are corrupt, their candidates are terrible, and they know they can't win on election day, so they're pursuing an illegal, invalid, and unconstitutional bullshit impeachment.
We're podcasting, so I can actually play his his clips, and here's one more.
But he's totally owned and totally controlled by the Washington swamp for many years. Hunter, you know nothing about energy. You know nothing about China. You know nothing about anything, frankly. Hunter, you're a loser. And your father was never considered smart. He was never considered a good senator. He was only a good vice president because he understood how to kiss Barack Obama's ass.
Yeah, something like your drunken uncle on Thanksgiving, right?
Things he doesn't that. Drink. Imagine if he did.
I know. That's the sad part, you know. And it is embarrassing that this is the president of the greatest nation on the planet, and this is how he handles himself. And he can't take what's going on. And if you think about it, I mean, he has very little to show for his presidency, and that really bothers him. I mean, I mentioned all the bills we've passed, none of which are seeing action. The only thing that's happened so far since he's president really is a big tax cut for the wealthiest, where 83, I think, percent of the money goes to the top 1% in a couple more years. And, you know, that's all he's got to show for a presidency, and actually a lot of bad to show. We just now have restarted a war in Syria. We've just sent thousands of troops to Saudi Arabia, where the president happens to make a lot of money. And, you know, when you look down the list, we haven't done anything on prescription drugs because he has not initiated it. We still haven't invested in our infrastructure. He never has had a health care plan, even though he wanted to take away the one that hundreds or that tens of millions of people are benefiting from. I mean, this is a guy who to call him a failure would be about the kindest thing you could say.
Your colleague from East Central Wisconsin, Glenn Grothman, doesn't seem to think there's much to all of this.
See what more comes out. We're going to get briefed next week. And, of course, there is today, as we're taping this, interviews going on with the former ambassador, so maybe new things will come out. But you've got to remember, people have wanted to impeach President Trump since the day he took office. And there are reasons why he is more of a lightning rod or hated prior to his predecessors. He is trying to drain the swamp. You know, we haven't had a president before who wants to really redo these trade deals. We haven't had a president before who cares about people coming in across the border. And there are a lot of people who want to go back to the days of anybody who wants can come here. There are people who want to go back to the days of we don't care how big a trade imbalance we have. So as long as he is different than what I guess I'll call the swamp, you're going to have a lot of people trying to impeach him. Now, if he did something wrong, we'll see if that comes out today.
Is there doubt in your mind that he might have done something wrong?
I don't think he did something impeachable, but we'll have to see.
Oh. Well, the ambassador had a lot to say, didn't she?
Yeah. Well, he certainly would answer. He admits the president did something wrong. The question is, does he want to say the I word, which, you know, will certainly get him in trouble. What's interesting is when they, you know, the president, I give credit. I think he's had the best political slogan of the last decade, drain the swamp. It's the same, really, as the message from Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders when they said the system is rigged against you. Really, the message is the same. But what Donald Trump doesn't say is he has more lobbyists in his administration than any previous president, Democrat or Republican. So this guy says a lot of stuff but doesn't live by any of those practices.
Well, Ron Johnson got reelected saying that Russ Feingold was a swamp creature.
Well, Ron Johnson got reelected because 250,000 fewer Democrats came out to vote in Wisconsin. But, you know, we will live through that for the remaining years in his term.
So you have a little credibility on fighting these trade deals. The Washington Post ran a piece talking about the intricacies of what's going on with NAFTA 2.0 right now, and the progressives, you know, want some changes from the administration, but other Democrats are sort of torn in whether, you know, to support what the president has renegotiated. They don't want to give him a win during impeachment. Now, they don't quote anybody as saying that. What are your thoughts on where we are right now?
Well, I think that's a little bit off because I was really proud of the entire Democratic caucus, not just my progressive caucus, the entire caucus. When we had a meeting with Ambassador Lighthizer, who, as you know, is the U.S. Trade Representative, who, by the way, I have had better interactions than I ever did with President Obama's U.S. Trade Representative, so I already give him some points for that. But when we got to talking to him in a caucus meeting, we were all on the same page. We want to make sure that the language around enforcement for the labor provisions and environmental provisions, which are marginally better than the current NAFTA agreement, are actually in the trade agreement. If they've agreed to the language, if you have it in an annex or another place outside of the trade agreement, we've had to reopen two of the last three trade agreements because they weren't in the right place, they weren't actually enforceable. So one, put them in a place that they're actually enforceable and then they mean something. Two, we need Mexico they did pass a law to try to have real unions as opposed to the kind of company unions they currently have, but they haven't done anything to address the 700,000 company unions they have, and that needs to be taken care of. Otherwise, you'll never really create a disincentive for people to send jobs to Mexico. And third and final, the president talks a lot about lowering prescription drug prices. But he put a big, wet, sloppy kiss to Big Pharma in there by extending biologic provisions for protections for 10 years for that to be abided by all three countries, which currently don't exist in Canada and Mexico. So they don't even care. That could easily come out. You take those three main areas, along with a few other things, but that's the main issues, and you have a passable bill. It is marginally better than the other NAFTA deal, and that's worth moving forward on if you do these few things that the entire caucus has asked for.
Isn't there a more progressive government in Mexico that might go along with some of those changes?
Well, there is. The biggest problem we saw, they actually passed something to address it, but then President Trumka from the AFL-CIO went down there, and he met with the person who's in charge of enforcement, and the very next day their budget came out, and they have no money to actually do the renegotiation of the contract. So that's something really that, if it doesn't happen, we're still going to have jobs bleeding across the border. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just passing the legislation, it's actually enforcing it, and I think that's a part that sometimes it gets missed.
Well, this is a big deal. This is why we have an auto strike right now.
Well, exactly. And but if you address those issues, and really, Sly, those are the issues, and I did that in a couple minutes, you have a trade agreement that will have 390, 410 votes in Congress.
We'll be back with Congressman Mark Pocan at SlysOffice.com.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. We love guitars.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com. Welcome back to SlysOffice.com. We're speaking with Congressman Mark Pocan, who represents the 2nd District. He was elected in 2012. I want to ask you about the presidential race that's going on right now. How old were you in Kenosha, Wisconsin, when you got interested in politics?
Wow, I think I was doing doors with my dad when I was 8.
See, you got me beat, all right? I was knocking on doors on the west side of Madison for John Lindsay when he ran for president when I was 11. So you got me beat.
Yeah, I remember, actually, I went on my own, and I did my street for Mo Udall when he ran for president. That was my first presidential campaign, and I was handing out stuff on every door on my little...
Oh, I was for Carter. We were on opposite sides of that one.
Oh, no.
Well, whatever. That was an interesting election. Anyway, Elizabeth Warren is on the ascent right now, and nobody's been able to answer this question for me. This woman was a Republican until 1996. Nobody's asked her, did you vote for Reagan? Did you vote for Bush? Did you vote for Nixon? This is a woman who wants to be the nominee of the party, and she's getting a lot of love right now, especially from the media. Aren't you a little concerned that we don't... It's hard for me to fathom that somebody in their 40s wouldn't have been that interested in politics. She claims she wasn't that engaged with it. After everything that has happened, think of all the stuff that went on with Reagan and Nixon. Are you concerned about that?
You know, I'll tell you, she resembles what most people in the country think, which is they don't follow politics. Like, you and I are the abnormal ones who follow it very, very closely.
I resent that.
Well, we just explained that we were doing doors for Jimmy Carter and Mo Udall. Case closed, all right? But most people don't. They're worried about paying their mortgage or rent. Do they have health insurance for their family? Can they take a family vacation? And if you read some of the books written by Elizabeth Warren, that's exactly what she thought about, because she was a real person. And then got very involved when she saw, especially on the consumer front, big corporations really ripping off people on too regular of a basis. So I look at her voting record and her policy proposals, which are consistent with her voting record, and based on that, she clearly, she and Bernie Sanders are the two most progressive people that are running. So I have no problem with that. In fact, one of the things I admire about her is her ability to take a pretty complex subject, and explain it in a way that other people, you know, people can understand. And that's a gift. I mean, it's something I see, you know, she and Robert Reich, I think, do the best. And that's really important. And then watching her, you know, be very, very authentically and personably doing these selfie lines and things. I mean, there is something to Elizabeth Warren's candidacy.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that. It's going to are you going to get involved in the primary?
I think I will. Last time I did, because we were trying to have all the candidates, you know, have progressive policy positions. But this time, because everything has started so early, we already know most of the people's positions. By the time it gets to Wisconsin, somewhere along the way, I'm sure I will get involved. I think I have a right to have a viewpoint.
What's going to happen again? You know, you've got obviously flack. A lot of leaders in Wisconsin did over the whole superdelegate thing.
Right, and I've supported the changes that are there. I really hope that it doesn't get to convention, and if it's not resolved on the first round, then superdelegates do have a vote, and then that's going to get messy all over again. So I'm hoping that that doesn't happen. But I did support taking away that kind of superpowers of the superdelegates because it really, I think, was an affront to the primary process for the presidential campaign.
Let me just get back to something real serious right now. This is from NBC.
The U.S. is getting out of Syria at the worst time, just as Turkey is making rapid advances in its war against U.S. allies, the Kurds of Syria, advancing with the help of Arab militias. The same ones we saw last night executing Kurds by the roadside were at it again today, U.S. officials tell NBC News. And they say the militias include former members of Al-Qaeda and ISIS. So it seems Turkey, a NATO ally, is using alleged terrorists to attack the Kurds, who fought with U.S. troops against ISIS for 4 years and carved out their own unofficial little state in the process. Now that autonomous zone the Kurds call Rojava is collapsing. And as the Turks and their militias push deeper into Syria, the big news dropped like a bomb. Nearly all of the 1,000 U.S. troops still in Syria are leaving, announced by Defense Secretary Mark Esper.
So I spoke with the president last night. He directed that we begin a deliberate withdrawal.
With no U.S. protection, the 2 million Kurds in Syria fear they'll be ethnically cleansed by Turkey and its militias.
All right. Yesterday, Steve Mnuchin was on, and here's what he actually said. This is pretty remarkable.
Right. Have you explained something to me that the president said about this this week? Take a listen.
Now, the Kurds are fighting for their land, just so you understand. They're fighting for their land. And as somebody wrote in a very, very powerful article today, they didn't help us in the Second World War. They didn't help us with Normandy as an example.
So what is he talking about? I mean, why would the Kurds obviously don't have a state, didn't have a state back then. Why did he expect the Kurds would have been on Omaha Beach with...
No, but I think the analogy that everybody's saying is we're abandoning the Kurds, like the Kurds are these long-standing allies. Our role in Syria was not to defend land for the Kurds in historical issues. Our focus was to defeat ISIS. So you have a long-standing conflict between people that have been helping us with ISIS and Turkey, which is a NATO ally. So I don't think this is as simple as, this isn't Russia attacking the Kurds. This is a NATO ally. And again, we've put them on warning. The president has authorized me to effectively shut down the entire Turkey economy, and we can do that at a moment's notice on his command. So
the damage is done.
Yeah, I mean, the president's actions were shameful. They were chaotic. Uninformed. I think he can no longer call himself an extremely stable genius after what he's done, because he's empowered all the people that we're not supposed to be empowering. We've empowered Russia, who's now working with Syria. We've empowered Iran, who's working with the Syrian government. We've empowered the Syrian government. Now they're having alliances with the Kurds for their own survival. We've empowered ISIS, because a bunch of their sympathizers and supporters have been freed through this process, all because the president doesn't read memos. And again, it's a shameful action by this president.
The Normandy comments. You know, Canada was with us at Normandy, as well as the Brits. Obviously, it was a very narrow operation. It had to remain a secret. This is the same president who, if being with us at Normandy was the hurdle, this president's put silly tariffs on Canadian steel because they were said that Canada was a threat to our national security. Have you ever seen a more erratic foreign policy?
No, and, you know, I'm surprised you didn't mention the work of Frederick Douglass on this as well. You know, this is a president who knows very little, has no problem with expressing how little he knows. The problem is he actually has the power to create amazing chaos. And what he's done is reinvigorate an eight-year war in Syria at the expense of our allies, at the expense of the U.S. troops, and as he claims he's trying to bring troops home, we're sending 2,000 to 3,000 troops to Saudi Arabia to protect a prince who ordered the murder of a U.S. journalist.
Finally, our farmers and the policy with China. The president, the other day, without anything written down on paper, without any agreement, has said he's ready to come to an agreement with the Chinese. Do you buy that?
No, the chaotic nature again, it's still being worked out. He just wants to take credit for something. He'll find someone to blame. All I can tell you is between, to a smaller degree, the NAFTA negotiations, to a little stronger degree, the Japanese trade agreement, which will really affect dairy quite a bit, and that means it affects Wisconsin, and the tariff by tweeting that he's had with China that's hurting soybeans and corn and other crops, we are having devastating impacts on farmers in Wisconsin. 1,600 family farms have closed since Donald Trump became president. And, you know, this is a guy who doesn't understand trade and doesn't understand the farm economy, and we're paying a price for that here in Wisconsin.
And I assume you heard Sonny Perdue, the agriculture secretary's comments at the World Dairy Expo.
You know, the go big go or go home, and then now the Farm Bureau here in Wisconsin is trying to provide cover. I actually called them as soon as they put out a press release on that because it was incomprehensible what they actually said, and I don't know if they actually understood what they said, but clearly, you know, in Wisconsin, much of our rural economy is based on small family farms, and the fact that any organization or any politician would not understand that is a real problem.
Congressman Mark Pocan from the 2nd Congressional District. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
Of course, Sly. Thanks
all
so
right.
much for having me.
Have a great day.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. Thank you, Sly.